an addict named Louie. My home group meets Thursday nights at 8 o'clock in Baltimore, or actually Woodlawn, Maryland. The name of the group is Constant Beginners Step Meeting, because it's a beginner step meeting. I hope you guys don't want a whole lot of dates and names and who's, what's, and wherefores, because all I can really share is what happened to me, because that's all I know. I don't know what Dennis saw, you know? Of course, sometimes he lets me know. Dennis invited me to chair this meeting. They asked him, and he said, I can't do it, you do it. So I don't know if I'm going to beat Dennis's ass after this is over or not. In the beginning of 1980, I had reached a point where I struggled to get to work. I still worked. I didn't draw a clean breath, but I still was able to work somehow, because, you know, I was just a telephone man. You know, I only deal with complex electrical circuits and personality, so I was able to continue working. But my employer had a surprise for me on March 24th of 1980. He invited me into his office and invited me to go to a treatment center. So, and my job was contingent on my going to treatment, completing it, and coming back to work. So I did. Now, he wanted me to go right then. Here it is, 5:30 in the afternoon. I just finished a day's work. I couldn't go to treatment. I needed a shower. Right. So I went home, used a little more, packed my bag, and I was on the curb in the morning, ready to go to treatment. I got picked up, and I haven't used since. So my clean date's March 25th, 1980. And it may have been the 23rd, I don't know, but who cares? It's been a while. It's been a while since I used. I went to Mountain Manor in Emmitsburg, Maryland, not far from home. And I got it. That's why I'm here. I got it. They told me the same thing every week for 4 weeks. Maybe that's how I got it. I heard the same thing every week. I was introduced to the steps. And I'm not bragging about this, but by the time I left treatment, I had taken a fourth step to a degree, the best I could at the time. It was honest. And I shared it with my counselor. Then I shared it with my group. I don't recommend that. But I had made a commitment to not using, to continuing to remain clean. Because when my employer invited me into treatment, he knew I was hurting. He knew I was suffering. Now, in 1980 in Baltimore, Maryland, there may have been two Narcotics Anonymous meetings. One was Sunday night, off Lock Raven Boulevard, and one was Thursday night downtown. Lock Raven Boulevard's the north part of town. Downtown's the center part of town in Baltimore. And that's it. So when I got out of treatment, I went to Alcoholics Anonymous because I had to go to meetings. And in those Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, fellow addicts who were there introduced me to Narcotics Anonymous, to those two meetings. And it was interesting, he wasn't my first sponsor, but I guess he was my first NA sponsor. chaired my meeting a couple of weeks ago on the 12th step. I invited him to share on the 12th step. And he kind of told us how he started the meeting at Lock Raven Boulevard. I don't know how the one got started downtown, but they were there. He was essentially invited to start a meeting for narcotics addicts at that church. The church invited him to start that meeting. And that's what happened after that. I came in. We went to those two meetings. There were, I don't know, maybe half a dozen people coming in and out. Most of us were going to AA meetings because, you know, two meetings just isn't enough. I really got a lot out of the meetings. I remember having to go to aftercare. This is, meetings that they prescribe from treatment. And I resented the hell out of it because I wanted to go to fellowship meetings, the 12-step fellowship meetings. Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous. That's where I wanted to go. So we have two meetings in Baltimore. Frank got a call from a guy in Washington, Mark W., and said, "Hey, I heard you guys have some meetings up there. Why don't you come down here and share some of your experience, strength, and hope with us?" And they had a number of meetings in D.C. I think they had about 10 or 12 in the metropolitan D.C. area, which included College Park and thereabouts. So Frank and I and a couple other guys that were attending the two meetings in Baltimore went down, and we went to like an area circus. And we got literature. We'd had a little bit of literature at these two meetings, but we kept Xeroxing it because we were running out and we didn't know where to get it. Because we'd look at on the back and it said this thing about, I don't know, Sun Valley or something like that, and we could never get it, reach anybody there. So we couldn't get any literature. But we went hooked up with DC. We found out how to get literature, decided it was easier just to go down to D.C. and pay them to get literature for us. And that's what happened. We just, for a couple of years, that's all we did. We got literature out of the D.C. groups. We started calling Jimmy Kay in California, and he started sending us literature about 6 weeks after we called. It was tough. Then one day, I think it was Mark or somebody, I can't remember who, called and said, "We just went to a convention at some college," and I've been trying all week to remember the name of this college, "in Pennsylvania. I think it's up Route 15 somewhere." They'd been to a convention. It may have been the first or second East Coast convention, I don't know. We want to get bigger. We want to make things happen. Could we meet up in Baltimore because we have people from Pennsylvania and Virginia and Washington?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I have a room in the back of the house. I guess we could meet there." And I was living with my parents. And my father had a very nice sunroom on the back porch. And about a dozen people showed up from Pennsylvania and Washington, and they had literature and they had stuff about recovery, about narcotics addiction, about what we needed to do, and then we met that day and we made a plan to meet in a couple of more months. And in a couple of more months, they picked me up in a van, and we drove to Wilmington. This was the people from Virginia and D.C. One of those was Larry N. It was Mark W. and Greg something or other, I think, was there. And there were a few other people. Brother R. Brother R. Brother Rick. Okay, he's already anonymous. So we drove up to Wilmington, Delaware, and we went to an East Coast regional meeting. It was about as many people as the front row and the people on this platform. And we did more of the same thing. We did what we did on my father's back porch. We just hung out. And we shared our experience, strength, and hope, and some of the information we'd collected from California and other places. We shared phone numbers that a guy from Virginia had gotten from a guy in a little further south, maybe North Carolina. And eventually, I can't remember where the next East Coast was. It may have been in College Park. I don't think it was in New Jersey yet. But we kept meeting, and it kept getting bigger. We started getting people from Maine and New Jersey, New York, Florida. And this was like in the first couple of years. And we were meeting, I guess, about every 2 to 3 months. And that was the East Coast. And then somebody said, boy, this is too big. I can't drive all this way. So then we formed a Mid-Atlantic region, which was, I don't know, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Washington, Maryland, Delaware, Mid-Atlantic states. And I guess they did something else further north, and they did some other stuff further south. And we had a Mid-Atlantic region, and we were still driving all over the place. Larry N., there's one, maybe two people in here that are remembering, used to tell us how he had to drive 150 miles a day to go to a meeting because he lived out in the boondocks in West Virginia or Western Virginia. But that's what they did. That's what we did. I forgot all about West Virginia. This is a wonderful convention. It's a beautiful time of the year to have conventions. But one of my favorites is in West Virginia because I remember Larry and what he had to do with that. Larry's gone. But he was very important to us, to all of us. I remember getting hugs from Larry in Washington, in Annapolis, just before I was impeached as chairman of the CMP region. I was impeached because I wanted to be, quite frankly. We won't go into that. But I did everything in my power to lose that job. I had been elected. This was, I guess, about, geez, I was married by then. I guess it was about 5 years into this process where we had a CMP region, and it involved Virginia and Maryland, essentially, in Delaware. And somewhere in Virginia, they elected me vice chairman and another guy chairman. And the next time we met, the guy that got elected chairman had used. Hey, this was a while ago. You know, a year clean was a big deal then. And people with not much time were elected chairman and so forth. So I was thrown into being the chairman, and since I had been elected vice chairman as kind of an honorary position, nobody wanted me making any decisions because I was notoriously the sickest of the sick, and which is a title I will not relinquish. So I presided over one meeting and was impeached at the next. In the meantime, Washington was growing slowly. Virginia was getting meetings. Virginia Beach was doing a bang-up job. They were getting a lot of meetings in that area. And I don't know exactly what happened because I was impeached, so I didn't really give a damn. I was involved in Baltimore. So I don't know really what happened in the CMP region after that. I don't even remember when the Free State region was formed, but I remember in Baltimore, we were one area. We were the Baltimore area. And this was 84 or thereabouts. And we had been meeting downtown, and then the church where we had been meeting for our area service had to do some renovations, and we had to move. And a group of people didn't like the place where we'd moved the area meeting, and they decided to form an area called the West Side area. So Baltimore now became two areas, the Baltimore area and the West Side area. I am now a member of the West Side area. It's hard for me because, I don't know, I still personally feel very strange about that division. There was just something odd about it, and I didn't like it, but that's me. And I concentrated on starting an office for Baltimore. When I was going to just AA meetings, well, AA and NA, I was elected group representative for my home group, my AA home group. And I went to the AA intergroup downtown. It was on a Thursday night, I think. And I went down there, and everybody hung out, and then they read the minutes, and that took 10 minutes, and then they said, is there any old business? And they dealt with that in 10 minutes. And then they said, is there any new business? They said no. And they reported on how much literature they'd sold and how many calls the hotline got. And 25 minutes after the meeting started, it was over. What are you all laughing about? Well... When I got involved in NA, I kind of expected the same thing to happen. Guess what? Do I have to explain? That's not how it worked. We had a whole lot more to do. We didn't have a book. We didn't have a basic text. We now have a lot of books. And they cost a lot of money. I'm surprised how much they cost. I can't wait for this tape to get to California. But, where was I? I've lost my train. This is Ocean City. I guess I have to go find a boat. Wow, there's the boat. So, is time up?
No.
Oh, she got a call. Okay, where was I? We're in Ocean City. That's good. Okay. The area services, regional service meetings I was going to at NA, now you know why I wanted to be impeached. Okay. In Baltimore, we needed an office because I had experienced in my AA experience that the office took care of everything. We got together, and it took 30 minutes. The office told us what they did, and that was it. It was cool. It was done. Okay, so I thought, okay, we'll get an office in Baltimore. And a few friends decided, well, let's go along with it. And we did that. We started an office. And then we didn't have to hand out literature in area service. Well, why do they still hand out literature in area service? I can't figure that one out. So, what that office turned into was a regional office. And instead of people, our representatives, going to the office and picking up literature, the area goes to the office and picks up literature, and the representatives go to the area, and then they buy the literature from the area. And I have no idea where all that money goes. I have no idea. I am now a member of the board of the Baltimore Regional Service Center of Narcotics Anonymous. And they're starting to show me that it's magic. It's just magic. Somehow we stay afloat. We keep getting literature from California. They keep asking for more money from us. And we keep trying to pass it on. And that's where this whole thing started. Where we had to get literature for our meeting at Lock Raven. Because somebody told us we were going to get into trouble if we kept photocopying it. So, things haven't changed. Or maybe they have. They're different. They're different. We now have some really wonderful literature. I read the first basic text. Okay, I gave it to a newcomer. I doubt that he's still clean. Okay. I've read the current basic text. I don't know, what is it, fifth or sixth? Fifth? Holy cow. Fifth. But it's wonderful. It Works How and Why is a work of art. I read it and read it. We read it at our meeting, our step meeting. And it's wonderful. It explains it. It goes right to the heart. 5 minutes. Well, I don't want to get in John's way. John's got all this literature to share. I'm doing it from the seat of my pants, so you know what comes from there. So, I don't need 5 minutes. Thank you all. Oh, no, this is a no clapping meeting.
All right, I would like to thank Louie, and I will introduce our next speaker, John.
Hello, everybody. Hope you all are having a good time here at CPR. The reason I have so much paper is because I hadn't been around to experience. I didn't get that gift like Louie did to get to see this thing grow. My clean date, September 5th, 1986. I can give you a little different perspective on what recovery looked like from my end of the woods. I'm from a little town called La Plata, Maryland, in the Tri-County area. We're hosting this convention this year. We're a little tiny area down in the southernmost part of Maryland. And I got clean there. It was one of them situations where I wasn't from there. It was just kind of, I ended up there. There was a married woman whose husband wasn't happy that I was dating her on a regular basis. And he paid somebody some money to take me out of her life. And I ended up in a little town of La Plata. And my story's pretty much like everybody else's. I went to get my oil changed in a rehab to get a fresh bed and some free meals, and a miracle happened in my life, and I got to stay there. And in 1986, it was a lot like Louie was saying. For me, there wasn't a lot of meetings. We're the largest geographical area in the state of Maryland. We're over 100 square miles. When I got clean, we had 2 meetings. I was introduced to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous at an early age, and I'm one of them addicts that, you know, like, I went to an orphanage when I was a kid, and there were nuns there, so I, like, don't like nuns. And I didn't want to get clean, and I went to AA, so I was, like, anti-AA. So I fought that, And there was two meetings, so I went, and they said, man, you got to go every night. And I was like, ain't but two meetings. And they said, oh, no, there's seven meetings. You just got to travel a little bit. And so that's what I did. And I went to Forestville on Saturday nights. I went to St. Luke's on Sunday nights. I had a meeting down my place on Monday night. And I traveled a lot. Like I said, it's 100 square miles. I could go from end to end and still be in my area and drive 100 miles one way. And still like that today. We have 23 meetings in our area. We're still a little tiny area, but we're committed. And we're doing well. So, like Louis said, I got this paperwork. One thing I like NA history because I like to know how the fellowship grew. I get a lot of inspiration from that. I get to see how God works the miracle. Helps me understand the miracle that happened in my life. You know, I didn't come here to get clean, man. I wanted to learn how to shoot dope on the weekends, work during the week. You know, that's all I wanted, maintain a healthy relationship, you know. And a miracle happened in my life, man. It wasn't my first trip in rehab by far, you know. But I've always liked the history of NA, especially the early history. And this is a regional history. And this is one of them workshops you kind of get picked for by default because they couldn't find anybody else to share about regional history. And they knew I kind of was into it a little bit. So, and I'm grateful to get an opportunity. I've studied a little bit of regional history. And what I can tell you is that I don't want to walk through all my paperwork. But in 1980, there was five meetings in Washington, D.C., I do know that. The biggest one was the Venata Group. And Doreen P. was running the show down there. A lot of y'all know her. I know that we're part of the Mid-Atlantic region, like Louis said. And if you want to know any of dates and stuff like that, I'd be glad to share some good stuff with you after this. What I would like to share, though, is what it was like when I got here. When I got here, I got a sponsor right away like they told me I had to do. And he said, first thing you're going to do is you're going to make coffee. He said, the second thing you're going to do is get involved in service. And I said, okay, and I like service. I'm a control freak, so I like service, you know. So I got to do my little area service bit, and they were like, we're small. If you need literature, you got to go to the region. And I was like, man, well, where's the region? And I said, well, it's every month, and it's in a different area every month. Back then, I think there was 21 areas. And when the Chesapeake and Potomac region formed in 1982, he remembers. See, I wasn't there. In 1980, it was funny because he was talking about the first couple East Coast conventions and the one up in Pennsylvania and the one here in Maryland. And there was a lot of stuff that happened at them East Coast conventions that really shaped our fellowship worldwide. There was a lot that happened on the East Coast. He was talking about the first edition in the Basic Text. And my favorite edition of the Basic Text that I still read a lot is the Gray Form. I think it's the most powerful book written. Unfortunately, the fellowship didn't think so at the time because they said no. Anyway, when I started going to regionals, it was, you talk about a service commitment. Like you said, we encompassed all of Maryland, part of Virginia, a piece of West Virginia, and some of Delaware. And they had regionals every month. And I live in the lowest, southernmost part of Maryland. So when the regional was in this area, which was Ocean Gateway, which was part of our region, it was 3 hours each way to set in a meeting all day. If it was in Dover, Delaware, it was 3.5 hours each way to go to a regional. But we did that because we didn't know anything different. I thought that's what everybody did. I was involved with the region early on and got to watch this region grow and got to go through a lot of changes with the region, especially when it came to the Baby Blue Basic Text and the part that Chesapeake and Potomac played in that. And I think that might be, even though I think it was really the way it was meant to be, that was the catalyst for our region splitting at the time. Our region had gotten big. We were 21 areas. We were all over the place, square mileage. And I think it was time for our region to split. But in the time that I've been clean, this area has changed a lot, this region. I was at the first Chesapeake and Potomac Convention in Annapolis. I was also at the second and third, and I was actually on a committee that sent it to Ocean City after Bethesda asked us not to come back. The High Regency wasn't happy about our behavior. We shared the hotel with some $150 a night guests that were not part of our fellowship, and I don't think they were happy about us walking around in shorts with no shoes and no shirt throwing frisbees across the atrium. I don't think it sat well with them, and they asked us not to come back. So we came to Ocean City, and we've been here since, and I like it here. As the region split, I think it was a good thing. I think it helped us a lot. We became, I believe we became 12 areas or 11 when we split. And it made it a lot more manageable. And then our region started meeting every other month, which was nice, too. I want to go back to what I was saying about D.C. and about some of the early groups in D.C. and about some of the stuff that happened that was difficult. You know, our fellowship, actually the first meetings in Narcotics Anonymous in D.C. were in the early 60s, and they were under surveillance, and they didn't prosper. And that's where the line, under no surveillance at any time, comes from. In fact, like I said, the East Coast in general played a big part of NA history in general of Narcotics Anonymous as we know it. Some of the early groups that used the name Narcotics Anonymous were out of, one of the earliest was out of Virginia. It was called the Nultro Group, and that started in Lorton Penitentiary, and that's Lorton spelled backwards. And they became networked with some other prisons and started a newsletter, and they used the name Narcotics Anonymous. And that was partly how Jimmy Kay got to know of programs that might work, and he developed our program after that. I think that's pretty neat to think that the East Coast, you know, some of the early meetings, they'd also used the name Narcotics Anonymous in New York. You know, all the attention now goes on to Narcotics Anonymous in the early days on the West Coast. And, you know, it's nice to know that there was recovery here as early as the 40s that they know about on the East Coast. And I think we still, in a way, on the East Coast, tend to be trendsetters. We're a large geographic area, and we're also large as far as the amount of recovering addicts there. And it's, if you look around at the clean time and a lot of the meetings over here, it's pretty impressive. It shows the program works and continues to work. I don't really, you know, I know a lot of dates and a lot of times, and I know a lot of what happened early on from studying, and I wish I had, you know, more personal experience to share with you on some of the history. I know when I go to a history meeting, I tend to like to learn, you know, what it was like for some of the early addicts that came in and how they, you know, really just went on faith, you know, and how maybe we could all learn from that. Early on, you know, it says ought never be organized, but there's a lot of organization in it today. And if you ever get involved with something like putting on a convention, you'll understand a lot more than that, about that. Currently, I think there's well over 200 meetings in our region. We still meet every other month as a region, and I'm still involved in regional service. And I like what Lou had to say about Area Circus, because it's like that sometimes, man. But the work's getting done, and the miracle continues. He was talking about the It Works How and Why, and, you know, some of the beautiful literature we came out, and we just went through another session of the conference agenda report, and you know, I really encourage people to get involved with that. You know, we're shaping the future of what Narcotics Anonymous will be like. You know, the addict today has it a lot easier than they did back when in the 80s, early 80s, when some of our older members got clean. You know, they broke down a lot of the barriers that we don't have to face. The newcomer today has a lot better opportunity getting clean. He has access to the internet. He has more books about recovery. You know, back in the early 80s, it wasn't even a basic text. You know, it was just a white booklet, a couple pamphlets. You know, but the core of the program is one addict helping another. And they had that, you know. They had two people willing to share about what was really going on, and they got to some solutions. I'm grateful to get an opportunity to be part of Narcotics Anonymous today. It's fellowship's changed my life in a lot of ways, and I'm grateful. That's why when I'm asked to share, I share. Fellowship continues to grow. I know a lot of the early history talks about the fellowship starting in 1953. I can tell you that Jimmy Kennett did not invent the name Narcotics Anonymous. There were several groups using that name. He is the father of our program because he took the groups that were scattered around and he collected them into one fellowship. He wrote most of our readings in the early 60s. He sent literature out, and he formed the basis of the fellowship as we know it. In the 60s, there wasn't a lot of meetings at all. At one time, depending on what you read, there were only one or two meetings in the United States through the 60s, parts of the 60s, and they were on the West Coast. Fellowship really didn't thrive until the early middle 70s. So when people come up here that say they got clean in 1980, they're some of the founding fathers of this fellowship. And they carry the experience and the future of Narcotics Anonymous and the history of it inside them, especially over on this side. I noted in 1966 there were four active NA meetings in the United States. I can tell you that. And that by 1980, there were 1,100 in 12 countries. I wish I had the statistics to tell you now, but, and I know there's people here who probably know, but I know we're in well over 35 countries, and we're in, I don't know what our membership totals today. The growth through after the basic text was phenomenal. I think it doubled every year for like 6 years. Fellowship, even though it's been around for 50 years, it's still very young. Like I said earlier, the founding fathers of NA really were people that got clean in the late 70s, early 80s in Narcotics Anonymous. There were people that came over from the other fellowship. So being a young fellowship like we still are, you know, all of us have a chance to make it better for the addict that comes behind us. I know there's a lot of good stuff going on with the world right now, and we're trying to get into some countries with a lot of countries getting away from communism. It's opened up some opportunities for us to get to share our message to people that never had an opportunity to hear it. I know last year they met with some members in China. I know they met with members in some other countries that tend to frown on drug dependency is a problem. They don't believe in addiction. But it's just good to know that we have an opportunity here to recover. It wasn't always that easy for a lot of folks. I was reading something the other day when I was looking into a little bit of history about the meetings in the early 60s in the Washington, D.C. area and how the police would wait for people to come out and they would arrest them. And some of the stuff about the Rockefeller Law where addicts meeting together, even if they were clean, it was still illegal and they could be put under arrest. And that law wasn't appealed that long ago. It was like the late 70s. When the fellowship really took off in the middle 70s, I believe that through that process of people really getting involved and getting active and forming the literature council and putting together the group conscience that we call the basic text, when that book became available, the message got available, and more people had access to the gift of recovery. And I think that that miracle still stays true today, that whenever we do our part and review a piece of literature, that we get involved in our conference agenda report and make decisions on how we're going to shape the future at Narcotics Anonymous, we make it available to more addicts. Because if, when I got clean, I didn't know, I never heard the message of hope. I knew there were people that went to meetings. I figured the court made them go, and I figured they were all lying. They were all high. They were going there to pool their money to go cop some quantity. That's what I thought. You know, first time I ever seen somebody I knew was clean that was a dope fiend, I thought he was a freak. I looked at him, and I knew that, because you know, we're dope heads, we know. I knew he had a dope problem before. I knew he wasn't using now, and I knew that wasn't natural. I was a hopeless dope fiend, and I figured all the rest of us were too. Well, I have a lot more to share. Again, I'm grateful for you all coming out and supporting this convention. This is one of the ways that we get to carry the message, you know, the unity that's expressed through a convention. And I hope you all have had a good time here, and I appreciate you coming out and hearing this workshop. Thanks for letting me share.
I would like to thank John, and we do have about 15 minutes, so if anybody wanting to share, please come up and speak into the mic.
I'm an addict. I'm grateful we're covering addict from Pittsburgh. My name is Louise. Hi, everybody. Thank you, Lou. Thank you, John, for sharing your experience and your hope with us. The longer I'm clean, the more history becomes important to me. I heard someone recently say that we can't really appreciate the flowers unless we really understand the roots. I'm not from this area. I'm not from this region. But as these guys were sharing, I just felt compelled to fill in a little bit more. The first time I got clean was in 1981. I was very young. I'm female. There were maybe five very spread out Narcotics Anonymous meetings in the Pittsburgh area, where now inner Pittsburgh area alone, and we have Pittsburgh, inner city, a ton of northeast, northwest, southwest area, we have a ton, but just in the PASNA area alone, we have almost 100 meetings. We're blessed with a wealth of meetings there now, but back then, in that whole, what is now our region, basically, there were about five meetings, and like Lou said back then, and I can't change my history, you know, and thank God, because of Narcotics Anonymous today, I don't wish to, but my history is my history. And if the people that got clean back then, we had no choice really but to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, I got clean the first time in 1981, and I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready. I had no idea there was another way of life. I could not relate to these. At that time, what I saw as old men sitting in church basements smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee was the last place I wanted to be. And I used again. I tried to quit again, and I decided to move to Colorado. And I had a bunch of legal trouble. You know this drill. I moved to Colorado for a while, and in 1984, got busted again hard with two felonies from over here and a bunch of felonies and misdemeanors over there, and I was sentenced to what was quite common back then, and this is what I want to stand up here and say to you. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the therapeutic community, but back then there were alcoholics over here and addicts over here, and after the meeting, if you want to, I can tell you a couple really funny jokes about the difference between an alcoholic and an addict, but it wasn't like never the two shall meet. There were like hardcore junkies over here and alcoholics over here. And alcoholics before AA were like sent to asylums, and junkies were thrown in places like Pier 1 or in jail or dead. I mean, that's it. That was it. That was the alternative. And jails, institutions, dereliction, and death. You know, it says that in our text. The way we used to be treated, though, is very quickly what I want to say. I'm sleep deprived. Please excuse me. But the way addicts used to be treated was so much different than we treat each other in Narcotics Anonymous. I spent 20 months in that therapeutic community. In our book, Miracles Happen, it talks about some of the early NA meetings, holding groups. We learn from our experience. We learn from our experience in some of the older California meetings. Because this is where some of the Synanon, Day Tops, these hardcore therapeutic communities, if I don't need to say any more. If you know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. And I was in Pier 1 in Denver. And there was Synacor. Synacor still exists. There's Synacors darted throughout the country. The way we used to be treated, though, is nothing like we treat each other in Narcotics Anonymous, and I'm just so grateful. And one of the reasons why I keep coming, and I just celebrated my 20th anniversary, and up until that, for some reason, up until that, I 6 years used to be a long time, you know, and up until that, I never, like, would ever rarely say how much clean time I had. When it was my anniversary, that was about it. But for some reason, once, you know, this 20-year milestone for miracle for me has passed, I'm really beginning to see it as just that, a miracle that not many of us reach. But I just want to thank people like you who keep coming, who keep providing us with hope that no matter how long we're clean, we can still shoot higher, aim higher. And, you know, that just for today, through this way, it doesn't ever have to be like it was before. This is such the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. Anyway, I just want to thank you all. Enjoy the convention. Thanks.
Thank you for sharing. Okay, we still have time for someone else. Okay, if not, we have a beautiful web club.